This is Amber Ray
and Rusty Tanton,
and you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
This is Rusty. I'm with Alec Peters of Screaming Sports, an Atlanta-based company. You want to tell us a little bit about what your website does?
So, Screaming Sports is for the 15 to 20 million people in the United States that play fantasy sports. It's an enormous industry, $3 billion industry. And what we do is we allow you to manage all your fantasy sports teams from all over the internet in one location. And then add automation to that. You can't get on those sites. And then make it all available over any mobile device through a web application. And the reason you do that is the fantasy sports people typically play fantasy sports on one of the big media company sites, like Yahoo's the biggest. There's ESPN, CBS Sportsline, AOL, Fox, all have sites. And so people are playing on these sites. You get invited to play on a fantasy sports team. So you're at work and Bob says, hey, you know, come play on my fantasy sports team. And you get invited and go to sign up on Yahoo. He's on one. And then you go to work out and some guy says, hey, come be on my fantasy sports team. I'm on CBS Sportsline. So then you go there. So what happens is the average fantasy player is on three teams at any given time. The hardcore fan is on five or six teams. And invariably, because of the way you get invited to them, you're on different websites. So that's the core functionality. We call it Fantasy Sports Dashboard. Allows you to manage all those teams in one place. We also have a mobile app, a Java app that's being deployed on Boost Mobile and Sprint currently. We're hoping to be on T-Mobile and Singular for the football season. And we're also developing Facebook widget right now, since that's very, very popular at the moment.
So I just started my Facebook account recently.
Did you? Okay, yeah. So did I. I know. So you learn about all these things. So we take that core fantasy sports dashboard and deploy it in different ways. And so Screaming Sports is the way we deploy it on the, on the web. So on Screaming Sports, it's actually a kind of a full-featured sports social networking site. So it's more than just being able to match your fantasy.
So do people fill out profiles and things there that are that have unique data to the Screaming Sports?
Absolutely, site? Yeah. They fill out a profile, add their friends, list what their favorite players, their favorite teams, their favorite sports are. They can do things called shouting matches where you get into it with someone else and argue a sports, you know, points. Babe Ruth is the greatest player of all time. No, it's, you know, Barry Bonds. And you can go back and forth and people can vote for that. And we have different things like that to engage you and make your experience more fun and more interesting.
Now, from a technological standpoint, I know all of these sites can't have open APIs where you can just go in and through SOAP or some protocol like that, just rip the XML directly out. How do you get the content from these sites?
So, exactly. They most of them don't have XML APIs, which is sad, but that's, you know, they haven't gotten with the whole Web 2.0 movement, I guess. And to backtrack a little, my last company, which was called MarketWorks, formerly AuctionWorks, we were in a similar situation. We were aggregating different auction sites, and eBay obviously was the big one. And we were screen scraping from eBay, basically logging. The user gives us a username and password. We log in as you and get the data we need. And we actually helped eBay develop their first set of APIs back in, this is 2001, I guess it was at that time. And so coming into this, we've all done it before. So at the moment, for most of the sites, we're still screen scraping, as it's called, where the user gives us their username and password, and we log in and get that information. Fortunately, we don't have to get, we get our own statistics feed, so most of the stuff we do, we don't have to log in as the user. You make a roster change, and we certainly have to log in as you and stuff. So we try to minimize that. But we hope that eventually everyone will move towards XML APIs.
Open APIs.
Yeah.
How do you handle it if, say, one of these sites actually changes the interface so that you go on there and the structure of the data isn't identical to how it was when your scraper was going? Does that disrupt service?
Sure, it can disrupt service. I mean, we used to have that problem with eBay. They make a change and it would break it. Now, That being said, eBay was a lot more complex than these fantasy sports sites. There was a lot more going on there. Fantasy sports sites are just delivering information, so they're not changing that frequently. And the data we need is not it doesn't happen that often. So, yeah, you have to stay on top of it, and you have to stay ahead of it. And that's what our tech guys do. So they're pretty responsive to that. If something breaks, you know, usually we'll find out because some user has a problem, and we're usually on it instantly.
How do the companies feel about having their content aggregated into a third-party site?
Well, I think they're like, back when we were dealing with eBay, originally eBay saw us as competitive, and they weren't very friendly to us. They didn't hurt, you know, try and do anything against us, but they just kind of kept us at arm's length. And eventually they realized that we were really good for their business. And then when I left MarketWorks, we were handling about 6 or 7% of eBay's domestic business. And at that time, we could take an eBay power seller and increase their business by, it was something like 50 or 100% in six months. So eBay finally said, well, okay, these guys are good. And I think it's going to be the same way here in this fantasy sports industry. I think at this point, they see us as disintermediating them, which we do. Although we have a partnership program where if we partner with them and they develop APIs for us, we give them ad space on our site. When the person's viewing, if you're CBS Sportsline, if you were our partner, when someone managed their CBS Sportsline team, they would see a CBS Sportsline, whatever ad CBS Sportsline wanted to deliver. Now, so we try and work with them in that regard. Unfortunately, they're old school media companies. I mean, we're talking about, you know, ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, which is really a media company, not a technology company. And these companies, they don't get it. The guys running fantasy sports are old school fantasy sports guys. They're not technologists. Now, interestingly, we had a great conversation with Fox, and they were totally with it, totally different. They were a young technology company. They got it. And they really want to work. We're trying to work with them. Unfortunately for them, they have Microsoft Passport integrated into their system, which is a nightmare. And everyone's trying, and they're trying, you know, trying to extricate it from their system. But they got it, and they said, "We see the value." So yeah, you walk, you know, you kind of walk a tightrope, and you try and manage it. And unfortunately, you have to convince them that there's a value proposition, which if they're not technology savvy, they just don't always get. I mean, you look at Trillion, which was the great internet message aggregator, and everyone uses that.
I use it in my work computer.
And now that was actually a downloadable app. They're coming out with a web app, but in the meantime, Meebo came out, and Meebo does the same thing. So, and then there's, you know, Yodlee. There was is a company that does it for financial services. So this is the way people want to manage their data. They don't want to go all over the internet.
Yeah.
They want to go to one place to manage everything. So we're going to try and drag them into the future.
I bet the Facebook app will pick up real quickly. People, I've been amazed by how quickly everything I've done on Facebook has just spread like wildfire, and how I started out my MySpace account and a year ago and have maybe 60 friends right now, and some of those people are not even real friends. I get on Facebook, and in a week, I've got 70 people on there, and they're all people I actually know.
That's cool, yeah.
I've just been amazed at how much better done I think Facebook is.
Yeah, yes. I think technologically, it's way ahead of MySpace. Yeah. I think everyone knows how crappy MySpace was technologically early on. It just had a great viral component to it, I actually heard one of the founders of MySpace speaking at a conference last weekend in the Valley, and it was fascinating. And they were talking about that, but yes, I think Facebook is certainly much more technology savvy.
Well, I've got an open API to develop applications.
Yeah, exactly, and it's really easy to develop a widget on there. So we're developing one in conjunction with another company, they have huge expectations for what we're doing. I hope they're right. I mean, I hope they're right. So we're going to support that, and we're pretty fired up about that. I think Facebook has the opportunity to change the way people manage fantasy sports.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed back a year ago, I every year will run an NCAA picks contest on my blog. I actually wrote some custom software at one point to enter the scores and keep track, because once you get past 50 people or so, it's just a nightmare to try to enter all that stuff manually.
I can imagine.
And one thing I wanted to do was to try to scrape scores from somewhere to automatically import all that stuff so that I wouldn't have to enter this every week. But I'll be damned if I could find them anywhere. I mean, I've seen one website now, very recently, that's doing that. I mean, do you know of any legal barriers or anything to posting scores in sort of an open API like
well,
that?
Well, no. Scores are public domain.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, there's the big case between Major League Baseball and CDM, one of the fantasy sports
programs,
because Major League Baseball, being the greedy bastards they are trying to,
no doubt.
You know, they're trying to own fantasy sports.
Yeah.
And so they sued CDM, the big baseball fantasy sports site, and basically said, hey, we have the rights to license players' names and statistics. And they took it to court. And in the first court case, they were slapped down on summary judgment on every one of the, their counts, so every one of their actions. So they really got spanked hard. They didn't even make it to trial. The judge said, you're not even close to a case. I mean, if you know what summary judgment is, the judge just says, you don't even have a case.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so they appealed, and my understanding is, and I could be inaccurate here, was that they appealed in a New York court, hoping it would be more friendly. And the judge slapped them down again. So I don't, and basically they're saying, the judges are saying, this is public domain.
Yeah.
Players' names are published in every newspaper in the country. The stats are published in every, you have no right to license this information. So that is of all the arguments that the defense makes, that's the one that seems to stand up the most. There are other arguments that are all being supported as well. Including the doctrine of latches, that you just can't come in and take over someone else's business.
Yeah.
They built this business for years. You don't have the right to. So that being said, I think that what you're talking about, statistics are a part of public domain. If it's a public event and it's published, anyone has a right to it.
Not to veer too off from the topic of your site, but I do have one other sort of topical current events kind of thing I'd like to hear your opinion on. NCAA, maybe a couple of months ago, month or two ago, tried to ban bloggers from live blogging the events.
Exactly.
Do you remember that? I mean,
I heard about that. I didn't hear about it when it was happening. And I know it was talked about recently at the Fantasy Sports Trade Conference in March. Now, there's another Fantasy Sports Trade Conference next next week that I'm going to, so I will, I'm sure, hear about that.
Yeah.
I think, so that, and I don't, I'm no expert on that, and but I understand how it's somehow broadcasting live events, which could potentially, I see the legal issues there, could potentially, you know, impinge upon whoever's broadcasting the event. Is it journalism? You know, I don't know. There's a line there between journalism and just...
It does get into a little bit of a murkier territory, and I'm interested to see how it all pans out. I don't... You know, I obviously, as a blogger, kind of have a knee-jerk reaction of, you know, up yours, buddy, but to the NCAA, that is. But at the same time, I can see where they're coming from.
Yeah, so I don't know. I couldn't help you there.
Yeah. Your website was recently featured on TechCrunch, which, for any startup, that's kind of gold right now.
Yeah.
And can you tell me about how that's affected the visibility of your business?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we pay a lot of attention to is creating legitimacy for our positioning. And our positioning is that we're the only technology company in fantasy sports. That there's there are media companies and there are fantasy sports companies. So a fantasy sports company may rely on technology, but their business is running fantasy sports. What we're trying to do is be the Google of fantasy sports. And when you look at Google, you think of a company that's always coming out with cool technology, whether it's email or it's maps. I mean, Google Maps is just ingenious, right? Who doesn't fall in love with that? And that's what Google's doing. They're just coming out with great technology. They see an area, they say they develop something in-house, and they deploy it. I think we can do that for fantasy sports. I think we are doing that for fantasy sports. We're taking this core technology and we're deploying it in different methods. So now you'll be able to manage all your fantasy sports teams on your cell phone, on your computer, on Facebook. I think so. That's our positioning. So we do things because that's what we like doing. We like building cool technology with an eye towards how do we position this company in a way that is different from everything else out there in fantasy sports. And the good news is that people perceive us that way. We've been able to convince people that, yeah, wow, these guys are developing really cool technology. And I've had some great people who are long-time fantasy sports people. I think of Rick Wolf, who's at Roto-World NBC right now. And he was just like, this is one of the coolest apps I've seen in years. So that means a lot when you come. You know, here's a guy who was, I think he was like employee number 14 at CBS Sportsline. And has been in the industry for 10 years. So that makes us feel good. And I know the guys up at Fantasy Sports Ventures, which is a consulting firm for fantasy sports, Clay Walker, who was in charge of business development at NFL Players Association, is one of the partners there. And he just loves us. He just thinks, yep, you guys are right on target. Matter of fact, he sent me an email this morning congratulating me on the TechCrunch and says, I've been hearing great things about you. So back to TechCrunch, I think TechCrunch is one piece of our strategy to get. I mean, it's helped us with our users. We just launched the application, so we didn't have that many users, and we tripled the number of users on it. So that was exciting, and a lot of people picked it up and talked about it, and so that's certainly good. I worked on that for a long time, and when I was in the Valley, met with the guys at TechCrunch, so we were real excited about that. And again, it gave us legitimacy with other players, and hey, it obviously pissed off our competitors too.
Yeah, you know? Sure thing.
It's always your competitors who are writing all the negative things about you in people's blog comments, we realize. So that's okay. That means you're paying attention to
it's
us.
Healthy, yeah. What's the revenue model for the site? How do y'all make money?
So it's a Screaming Sports is ad revenue model. We are, it's possible we may charge for some of the premium services on Screaming Sports. If you get our app through Boost or Sprint, you get the Java app on your phone. This will be like $3.95 or $4.95 a month. But mostly advertising, Facebook advertising, Screaming Sports advertising. Once we get our user base going and all that, that'll be the predominant revenue model for that. So it's putting a lot of users on your site. That's what's important.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because my memory sometimes is a little hazy. I thought I read in the Facebook or in the TechCrunch article that you recently secured a round of venture funding.
Yeah, we raised $1.25 million from Mangrove Partners, which is the venture capitalist based in Luxembourg that was the first institutional investor in Skype. And I've known these guys for about 4 years, and they're great guys. They have a good vision, and I think they're serious about supporting an entrepreneur. They're very entrepreneur-friendly. And I think that's talked about a lot with the VCs, but most of them are full of crap.
Yeah.
They're greedy bastards. And so finding the right one, and I've had two bad experiences with Valley VCs. So I wasn't crazy about going back out there for more. And I've known the Mangrove guys. They almost invested in my last company. And so we did. So we'll probably be looking for money in the beginning of next year again.
Now, this company's been around for a little while, but the site is new, correct?
Right. So Screaming Sports is new. It launched last month. We were FS, as in fantasy sports, FS Dashboard before this. And that was the site. It was just about managing fantasy teams. And we decided we needed to broaden it and go into have more than just manager fantasy teams on the site. And that's kind of what Screaming Sports is about. So we basically now you can't, you go to FS Dashboard to get redirected to Screaming Sports.
When you started FS Sports, did you bootstrap it or did you start it with
some
funding? It
was absolutely bootstrapped. Yeah. When I came on full time May 1st of last year, we had a commitment from a Valley VC and we were supposed to close 1st of June. And was that right? 1st of June or 1st of July? Yeah, I guess it was 1st of June. And so they kept dragging out and then backed out at the last second. One of the reasons I hate VCs. And so for the next 7 months, mm-hmm. so 6 months, we bootstrapped it.
Yeah.
And it was little money from my dad, my personal savings. Sean and I were, we were running the ragged edge. I mean, and I told Sean at the time, I said, this is going to pass. We're going to get money. And you're going to look back and laugh at this and just say, "And it, but I think that makes it so much more meaningful when you're successful, too. And then we raised the money from Mangrove. They were great. They were just awesome. I flew into Luxembourg. I met with them. They told me yes on the spot. I mean, they knew I was, you know, my situation. They said, yeah, we'll do it. And started going to the paperwork. And then it took about 2 months to close, but they were great. They wrote us a bridge loan like 3 weeks into it. They said, oh, look, this is going to take a little longer than we thought. Wrote us a check. I mean, these guys were just awesome. I just love those guys. They're just they really get the human side of venture capital, which most American VCs don't, because it's all about money and returns, and there's just no personal element. Look, you got to be successful. We all, you know, we had our board meeting before you came in. We had our monthly board call, and it was about numbers, right? But at least there's a I think every entrepreneur, and this is when I talk to entrepreneurs and help them with venture capital, I talk about that. And talk about, you really gotta like and trust. I said, and when you trust someone, don't misplace your trust, because it doesn't mean you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna get screwed. Just be really careful about who you choose to be in business with.
Looking on your website, you know, you've been kind of all over the place. You've been to a few different places, it seems. How did you end up in Atlanta with this company?
Well, I wound up in Atlanta because my family had moved here. My mom, my dad, my brother, and his two boys all moved down here in 96, I believe it was, 96, 97. And so I went to law school at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, passed the bar exam, and had been coaching for a while at that time, coaching men's and women's volleyball. And I knew I wanted to coach. And I left, and so I moved moved out to California, and I was got a job as the assistant men's volleyball coach at USC, the real USC, Southern Cal. And I coached there for 4 years, made no money. I was like $15,000 a year. I was poor, and I didn't realize it. It was the best 4 years of my life. And I tell everyone, you need to follow your heart. You need to do what you love doing. And I will never regret that I spent 4 years I traveled around the world with the U.S. national team. We won an NCAA championship at USC. Best 4 years of my life, and I loved it. And then I was, as case may be, I was seeing a young lady, and the M word, marriage, kept coming up. So I realized, okay, I better get a real job. Can't support a family on that. And there weren't a lot of jobs in men's volleyball at the time. Still aren't. So I foolishly became an entrepreneur. And struggled for another 7 years, and that's why I moved to Atlanta. I said, okay, enough of this. This was my first company, which was a sports marketing company, and I just said, can't make enough money at this. And I was switching careers, so I moved back to Atlanta to be near my family, and and then one of my friends who I'd done some business with became CEO of a small internet auction. This is 1999, so this is when eBay was still small. And this company was competing with them. So made me an offer to be his VP of marketing. I took the job, moved to Pennsylvania for 6 months. And while I was there, the idea for AuctionWorks came up, and my VP of sales said, my father-in-law and I will give you $100,000 to start the business. Voila. That was the start of AuctionWorks, and I took that up to about $6.25 million in revenue in 2004, and then left. It was the right time to leave. I don't like managing things. I'm an entrepreneur. I like building things. And learned a lot of good lessons from that company. I would say that all those lessons have been put into Screaming Sports. We were talking about that on the board call, as a matter of fact, just our, for example, our attention to our user interface. That when someone has a problem with our site, it's not always just technology. Sometimes it's the way we communicate that technology. Lesson learned at you know, at AuctionWorks. I mean, just a lot of lessons. I'm a big believer in personal growth and learning from your mistakes, and just it's a process. Mm-hmm. Life is a process, and if you keep learning in it and embracing and taking those lessons, so gosh, there's so many things at Screaming Sports that are different than at AuctionWorks. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that are the same. Building a really cool corporate culture is really important to us. Mm-hmm. A place where people want to work. I know that so many people at MarketWorks have told me that once I left, the corporate culture fell apart, and then no one wanted to work there anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's important, and that certainly comes from the CEO. And on the tech side, Sean Haney, who's my CTO and my partner, my co-founder.
Any relation to Jeff Haney?
I have no idea.
I'll have to ask him later.
Yes, you'll have to ask him. So Sean's that way with technology, and mm-hmm. and he's a very cooperative technologist, mm-hmm. right? So he's actually working with we have our former CTO, mm-hmm. Jerry Admiral from MarketWorks, kind of consults on a small basis. And Sean's great that way. Mm-hmm. John Eaton, who was my co-founder at AuctionWorks, who does our product management. So we have a lot of people who were working at MarketWorks who lend a hand here and there, and Sean's great at building that cooperative feeling in technology. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really, really critical. And that's what certainly venture capitalists have no understanding of corporate culture, mm-hmm. because they always are the leading cause of destroying corporate culture. You'll hear that from any entrepreneur. They'll come in and replace the founder just because, you know, on a whim, and, mm-hmm. and it really takes the heart and soul out of a company. And that's why companies are fun to work for, because mm-hmm. there's fun people there. And I always like hiring people who have that kind of passion, mm-hmm. and vision and drive.
Just to throw out a couple of observations I've had in conversations with folks who are trying to start businesses, who are involved with sort of the emerging social media scene around here, everything like that, is that a few years ago, trying to start a business in Atlanta, there was no community, there was no sense of a support network of any kind. The people I talk to now say they feel optimistic, like that sort of that network is starting to kind of emerge, but it hasn't quite turned a corner yet. They also say that it's almost impossible to get VC funding around here.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the pluses and minuses of doing business in Atlanta?
Oh, boy. It's so funny you bring this up, because I uh-huh. just had this conversation mm-hmm. in a fundraising meeting for a company I'm on the board mm-hmm. of. Maestro Music. Mm-hmm. If you have, they're an awesome little company, and they're raising money now. My advice to mm-hmm. other entrepreneurs mm-hmm. is move to the Valley, mm-hmm. get out of Atlanta.
Yeah.
So because I don't see that network, mm-hmm. There are no VCs here mm-hmm. in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw Norrell Mosley under the bus and yeah. say they're not a VC; they're a private equity firm.
Yeah.
They do not take any risk in mm-hmm. the deals they do.
Yeah.
So in my mind, they're not a venture capitalist, mm-hmm. and that leaves, I think, is it HIG is the other company? Mm-hmm. They're the same way; they're a leveraged buyout firm. So there's no venture capital in Atlanta, and basically there's a couple in Florida. Mm-hmm. That I've heard, you know, good and bad things about. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anything much about them. And there's a couple up in the Triangle. Mm-hmm. If you want to start a business, honestly, mm-hmm. if I could, I would have moved to the Valley to start this business. And mm-hmm. in fact, we may well move the business mm-hmm. to the Valley. But if you're an entrepreneur with a great idea, get out of Atlanta. That's mm-hmm. the first thing I can tell you, mm-hmm. because for two reasons. One, you can't raise money here. Mm-hmm. So right off the fact, there's no money in Atlanta. In the Valley, there's money all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're throwing it at you, but
if you do your networking
and you have capabilities, uh-huh. you can raise money. Which is honestly one of the mistakes I made when mm-hmm. this VC backed out on us. I should have mm-hmm. just moved out there and started raising money out there. And that was a mistake I made. So I would tell any entrepreneur to move out there. Mm-hmm. I do not see a bright future for Atlanta for all those reasons. Mm-hmm. There's no money here, so entrepreneurs can't start companies here. And any VC in the Valley, there's so much in the Valley. Mm-hmm. Why do they need to invest in a company in Atlanta? And they'll all tell you the same mm-hmm. thing. You know, they got 20 great companies in front of them in the Valley. Mm-hmm. Why should they take a risk and have to fly out here? It doesn't make sense. So the Valley is such a electric place to mm-hmm. be. You spend a week out there mm-hmm. and you come back here and you realize that you're in this black hole here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. everything's happening in the Valley, mm-hmm. and there's so many great people to meet and so many intelligent people, and the ideas there and the company and the networking can do, it really is, it's just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I hate to throw my, you know, my current hometown mm-hmm. under the bus, but this really isn't the place to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think during the bubble, it was possible to do things mm-hmm. here, and there were a few, you know, success stories here. And honestly, my last company, yeah, I had good success. I mm-hmm. I raised $5 million from angels. Mm-hmm. They're all gone.
Yeah.
You know, the angel community in Atlanta is practically non-existent, non-investing. So I had a good experience here in back in 99, mm-hmm. 2000 and so on. But unfortunately, I don't now. Mm-hmm. That being said, I have given up on Atlanta. So I am not at TAG meetings. Mm-hmm. I am not at this yeah. event. I'm not networking. So I do not know if I should be optimistic mm-hmm. about Atlanta or not. Mm-hmm. All I can say is there's no money here mm-hmm. and there's no one to there's no great networking here for a technology company. So, and I'm doing everything out. Mm-hmm. For my second company, I'm doing it all in the Valley, mm-hmm. except for the fact that we are physically located in Atlanta, which is a great city. Yeah. And I mean, from a livability perspective, mm-hmm. it's all Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You want to raise, as a matter of fact, if we move to the Valley, I'll be leaving the technology team here because mm-hmm. they've all got wives and kids. Mm-hmm. They need to be raising them here. Mm-hmm. And we don't need, and in the Valley, but the business team needs to be in the Valley.
Yeah. What do you think, aside from just the general .com crash, which wiped out lots of these people, what do you think caused these people to leave Atlanta?
Mm-hmm. what do I think caused mm-hmm. them to leave Atlanta?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I have an answer for that. I think, mm-hmm. you know, the bubble was mm-hmm. the classic, rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of artificial inflation in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Robbie Stevens opening mm-hmm. an office in Atlanta, right, and mm-hmm. closing it, 2 years later?
Yeah.
Perfect example. A lot of bubble companies in Atlanta, mm-hmm. right? I mean, companies that, sold for a lot of money that were vaporware mm-hmm. Or businesses that had no sustainable business model. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the story of the bubble all over the country. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly, happened here in Atlanta. So, I don't know if I have an answer for you on that. I just think that it now any entrepreneur has to look at Atlanta. And if you're building a technology mm-hmm. company, mm-hmm. you have to just cast a critical eye mm-hmm. towards what environment is going to support your success.
Mm-hmm. I guess last question, because we're probably both needing to get on to meetings and things, but what do you think would be necessary to build an environment here where people could actually succeed, aside from just money coming in?
You kind of get towards this ignition problem mm-hmm. In that, when a star is a bunch of gas that just keeps collapsing on mm-hmm. itself until it ignites, and that's the problem here. In the Valley, an entrepreneur has so much around him mm-hmm. that if you are capable of learning, you are capable of succeeding. Mm-hmm. Here, there's just not that around. There's mm-hmm. no support system around you. Mm-hmm. And there aren't a lot of great examples mm-hmm. around you. Mm-hmm. And there aren't a lot of, there's not enough great entrepreneurs here mm-hmm. that have been successful. How many Chris Klausers are there in Atlanta mm-hmm. or Jeff Arnolds? Mm-hmm. You know, there's just out in the Valley, you throw a rock and hit one of those guys, mm-hmm. And here they're mm-hmm. really rare. And so getting a meeting with someone who can really help you is really, really tough.
So does it become kind of a chicken and egg scenario?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And I that's not my area mm-hmm. of expertise. I can only speak to my experience, but I think it's very hard. I work with some of the business plan competitions mm-hmm. here in town, and that's how I met Maestro Music. Was mm-hmm. I judged their business plan mm-hmm. and met them again like a year and a half ago, and they had actually survived. Mm-hmm. So I think Atlanta can potentially incubate something, mm-hmm. but they got to be ready to move out to the Valley if they want to get funded.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you do here in Atlanta? I'm not smart enough to have that answer. Mm-hmm. I can only speak to what an entrepreneur can do mm-hmm. to make his company successful.
Well, thanks so much for speaking with me. What, again, is the URL people can visit you at?
It's www.screamingsports.com.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.